Yes, thank you, Dawn. Hey, everybody. Hey, good to see you. I keep hearing to start with this scene from the movie, so I'm going to do that. Here we go. Screen share, share computer sound. I may have to make that smaller. Let's see, where is it? This one. Okay.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bone. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. Say, Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. Sun didn't shine. Picked up my shovel and I walked to the mine. I loaded 16 tons of number 9 coal and the stopper said, well, bless my soul, you load 16 tons. Why do you get another day older and deeper in debt? Speed it on to call because I can't go. I'm on my soul to the company store. Drizzling rain, fighting in trouble, my middle name. I was raised in a cane break by an old mama line, and a high-tone woman made me walk the line. You load 16 tons, why do you get another day older and deeper in debt? So Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. Step aside. A lot of men didn't, a lot of men died. One fist of iron, the other is steel. If the right one don't get you, then the left one will. You load 16 tons. Why do you get another day older and deeper in debt? So feed it out your comic, cause I can't go. The company store.
I say, all right, I'm computer challenged here today. I assume you're hearing me because my computer still tells me I'm muted. Yes, you're hearing me. Thank you. Okay. So anyway, like I said, I was here to go ahead and play that, particularly after Regina's comments about it in her teaching hour. About the general overview of the movie, which actually leads us to this first question on the play sheet. If you were to rename this movie from a spiritual or truth perspective, what name would you give it? All right. Who else would like to share? A Journey into Fear, Tony said. And Awaken from the World of Man, Shauna said. Yeah.
I had orange soda or freedom, question mark.
That's great. Lynn?
Yes, there is always something with Joe.
Oh, nice, yeah. It's a good line, thank you, yeah.
It's at the end, but
Perfect. Yeah. Mine was not nearly, it's not a blockbuster title. It's not going to bring you into the theater, but mine is Waking Up to Life, finally. Connie, do you want to try again? You're unmuted, so. No. All right. We'll work on that, you and me, tomorrow night. It'd be nice if you could participate now, but yeah. You might want to restart, Connie. Just get all the way out and just restart the whole machine. Yeah, and Regina notes that you can type your answers. That's a nice noise. I don't know what it was, but it was nice.
Sorry, my phone.
Oh, no, that's a nice ring, Lynn. All right, so... Okay, the next question, and if you all feel that there are questions that aren't addressed, that you have something that you want to say about this movie that never got addressed in this play sheet, just say, hey, to heck with your play sheet, here's what I want to say, okay? the next question, though, on the play sheet is, in what ways, if any, were you able to identify with Joe Banks? Go, Don.
His brain cloud is reminiscent of how we naively believe all these thoughts and concepts that the world, our parents, schools, whatever have taught us. He doesn't realize it, but he's the whole time he's believing a lie, naively, of course. It does set him upon eventual miracle, which I think is like where we're all headed if we haven't already experienced some miracles along the way of what it's like when we release some of these beliefs that we've believed, concepts that have weighed us down and made us feel like kind of like his life was. I mean, I can't tell you how many jobs that before this is literally the best job I've ever had in my life, but I can relate to this guy and the lousy jobs he had in the beginning. And it's so funny, he was holding his shoe and he talks to the one lady and he's saying, I feel like I'm losing my soul. It was so corny, but it was so cute. Okay, here we go. So yeah, I can relate to that.
Thank you, Dawn. Anybody else want to address that question? Yes, ma'am. Yes, Lynn.
Totally relate to that because after my divorce, I went and got a job. This was many years ago as a switchboard operator for $175. And I had two children to take care of. And I ran into my ex-husband in the supermarket and he asked how I was. And I said, I got a job. He said, you did? That's wonderful. I said, I feel like I sold my soul for $100. So I totally relate.
Yeah, awesome.
Many jobs and divorces. You wonder what's it all about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you for sharing. Well,
I think Tony wanted to.
I'm sorry, I didn't see you, Tony. Go, please go.
It's okay. in the beginning of the movie, I answered this question by saying no, that I don't feel that I could identify with Joe, but I think the movie had only been started for like maybe 10 minutes. But I was realizing that it didn't seem like Joe was having a lot of fun in his life. He was very down and depressed. And so I didn't feel that I could identify with that portion of his personality, but I do see how I could take life less seriously and have more fun. And I chuckled a lot when he was playing around with the arm and he was taking the arm and playing with the guy's desk and his face, and I really was just laughing out loud because he was having fun. And I think that I could be more relaxed and at ease with just the naturalness of life and just let my guard down a little bit. So I feel that that's something that I could learn from. So thanks.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. And I just make sure I'm not missing anybody else. I need to bring the right window up so I can see you if you raise your hand virtually. I wrote here that there's been more than once in my life that I have lived in fear. The fears change, but the result of the fear doesn't change. The living in fear keeps me feeling trapped. It keeps me feeling like I can't fully live my life. And I think that's where Joe's coming from, and I could certainly relate to that. So what causes Joe to abandon his humdrum life? And then the second part of that question is, how did he get there in the first place? Yeah, Ron, please go.
I thought it was maybe a combination of two different things. The crisis, which I think is not unusual for a lot of people to come to grips with something or having to deal more honestly with themselves because there's someone forced to. They didn't make the choice themselves. Life kind of brings them to that precipice. And inattention. I think on Joe's side, he had lived, according to his doctor, under a regime of fear for a long time. But I'd say Joe had not really been paying much attention, not knowing what he didn't know, but he was just letting life move on without giving another thought, good, bad, or indifferent.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that.
as far as the abandonment of a life, you know, when you're in crisis, you have to make, you're forced to make a decision. So, you know, it was. Of course, I don't think he knew what decision he was going to make at that point in time until he'd been made the offer. I can't remember the gentleman's name that came by, but clearly he was a different person when he went to the office and having a little fun with the situation. And I said, screw it, chuck it all.
Yeah, interestingly, that funny old fella, Lloyd something, we saw his name a minute ago. Anyway, his name in the movie was Mr. Gray No More. Gray No More, which, yeah, so there's all kinds of symbols sprinkled in there. Yeah, but I think you're right. I think he didn't know where he was going at that point, and the diagnosis opened the door to other possibilities for him, yeah.
Shauna raised her hand.
I'm sorry, I didn't see it. Shauna, please go. And you all just feel free to break in. I would really love for this to be a discussion. So just unmute and say, you know, whatever. So go, Shauna.
Okay, you got it. When Joe came back after his diagnosis to his boss, he was yelling at his boss. I don't know why I put up with you for all these years. I was chicken poop. I sold my life to you. So it was fear of change that held him in that terrible mind numbing job for so long.
Yeah. In fact, he said I was, I think I wrote it down somewhere, but he said I was, it was fear. It was yellow stinking fear. I was afraid to live my life. So I sold it to you for $300 a week. Yeah. And we do that.
So much grace in this, because if you see it, there's all these different levels of fear. Like you just said, that was a really good point, Shauna, that even that's how it started. He was so afraid. He was stuck in this job because he thought he had to have it. But then it was a hypochondria, because you know that's fear too. You fear this is wrong with you or that's wrong with you. And then it's almost like he went all the way in, got the worst diagnosis, supposedly. Make one, but that he could get. And then there was like a reversal, you know, like Byron Katie talks about the, you know, the turnaround. And for him, that moment, I guess when he had the death sentence, was his turnaround. And he like flipped the script, and he was like, and did all these things that he was afraid to do. Like the worst thing that could happen, the worst fear is death. When you face that, it's like, what else can you be afraid of? You've that's the ultimate. So what else you got to lose? Yeah, so that's really good point there, Shauna.
Yeah, and in fact, Dawn, you touch on part of what I was getting to in one of these questions, and that is, you know, several teachers teach that contemplating death as a way of waking up to your life. So, yeah. You also talked about his hypochondria, and I really appreciate your take on that. Any other thoughts about the significance of Joe's hypochondria?
To me, it was he was believing his thoughts.
Mm, yeah. Boy, yeah, we can relate to that, huh? Yeah, I posted an article on the forum, a review of this movie. So if you didn't get a chance to see it, look at it. It made a lot of points that I hadn't considered when seeing this movie before. But one of the things that the woman who wrote the article said about his hypochondria, that I noticed then after having read her article, I went back and noticed it. It may have been an indication that he knew that something wasn't quite right with the world. You know, he's like, I don't feel good. And of course, his boss is telling him, nobody feels good. You're not supposed to feel good. That's not what this world is about. You know, when you're a grown up, you don't feel good. Doesn't bother me. But Joe was getting it, right? That there's something not quite right. And of course, he wanted to place it on the not feeling good on the body, like we would. But there was just this sense that something should be different. So, you know, you could argue that opened him up to what to the rest of the movie, you know, to the adventure of having a brain cloud. Yeah.
Except the doctor was very specific. The brain cloud had nothing to do with it. The reason he was feeling bad was because of his fear. So there are no symptoms of brain cloud, none whatsoever.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Yeah. Connie, you still trying to talk, honey? Bless your heart. I'm sorry you can't. You know, you could call in. If you have those numbers, you could call in on your phone. All right. Okay, here's another, did Lynn, were you going to say something? You're muted. That's got it. Uh-oh, you're muted now. There you go.
Okay. Brain cloud is like a fog that we all walk through when we're walking through life and sleepwalking.
Yeah.
He knew he was just doing the paces, but he knew that there was something more. But he didn't know how to get there to figure it out. So he had to get sick. And a lot of my friends, I've seen people who throw themselves into hospitals in order to get time off. Instead of just saying, I need to relax, I need to step back from work or relationship or whatever it is. But they don't want to go there. So they have to pick something that's very bad and desperate that makes them get there. That's it.
That's a great point, Lynn. My dad was a general practitioner in a small town, and he used to tell me, because back in the 60s, early 70s, your doctor is part of the family. I mean, you said something about a doctor, those were fighting words. So he knew these patients really, really well, and that some of them would come in not feeling well, doc, you know, please give me something. He'd check them out, and there was nothing wrong with them at all. So back then, he would give them a placebo. And you know, a day later, 2 days later, they come and say, Doc, I don't know what you gave me, but it was great, man. I'm feeling so good. So it's the thoughts. It's sure that they're disturbed by the brain cloud, but just, you know, that's part of the part of the fear. I don't know exactly how it all works together, but clearly the mind, it controls how you feel.
Yeah, cool. That reminds me of what Regina was talking about in the last hour about her quote about waking up or meditating is easy and difficult. You know, it's all what you believe it is, right? Those are just value judgments. That's just, you know, if you believe it's going to be easy, it'll be easy. If you believe it's going to be difficult, it'll be difficult. It's just, you know, just do it. Yeah. That placebo effect, Ron. Okay. The next question I have here is, there are lightning bolts throughout the movie. First, I don't know if y'all saw them. Did you see the lightning bolt images throughout the movie? Good. What do you think is the significance of the lightning bolts throughout the movie? Yeah, done.
Their wake up turning points. Like, for instance, one of the big turning points is when he's on the boat and it goes down. And it was so funny because the Meg Ryan character was, that's my boat. I got to take care of my boat. And he got to watch. Well, eventually that's going to be his life partner. I guess he didn't know it at the time, but he got to watch her lose everything. So he got to lose everything through the brain cloud, and he's about to jump into a volcano. I don't think at that point she may have known it, but he got to watch her have this same sort of kind of experience of losing it all. And then you get that shift. There's like each little, like a lightning bolt is like a flash, like, okay, it's time to turn that light bulb on and see things differently. Okay, letting go.
Awesome. Yeah, I really like the way that you expressed that, Dawn. And it was cool that the lightning bolts were there even at the beginning of the movie. Again, kind of like his hypochondria. Something, you know, there were clues. There were clues that something, what was going on wasn't quite. Yes, it's foreshadowing. Yeah. Yeah, because, yeah, even the rectal probe looked like a lightning bolt, you know. Going into the... sidewalk going into the factory was that same shape. And then, of course, as they were going up the volcano, lightning, the same shape. And for me, it seemed like, what I wrote was the ever-present invitation to awaken to pure consciousness. And it's always there, whether we recognize it or not. And so that's why it was cool that it was at the factory and at the in all these other places. Yeah, I guess sometimes it just gets louder, like when it sinks your boat. but the invitation is always there, yeah.
I see that Lynn wrote, big change is coming, the light is here.
Amen, that's it, yay! Amen. Thank you for reading that to me, Donna. I had missed it. I forget to watch the chat. And Connie, you may not have seen on the chat that Don put the number to call in. Oh, I heard you. Whatever you did, that's good.
Oh, yay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
It's low, but.
But don't touch anything. Hey, Connie, did you have something you wanted to share from some of the previous questions?
Way back when, I wanted to say that I would rename the movie Love Comes to the Rescue.
Awesome. Thank you.
I didn't see the lightning bolts. I'm ashamed to say, but I didn't see them.
Well, I had to watch the movie 3 times to see them, so.
Okay. Thank you, Jacqueline. Thank you for comforting me like that.
All right. Okay, and Dawn has addressed this brain cloud a couple of times, and I really liked your analogy, by the way, Dawn, of the brain cloud being like that whole conditioning thing that we have to break through. We all have a brain cloud, right? So and we talked about the imminent possibility of death. So maybe we've answered this question. Does anybody have anything else that they want to say about this whole brain cloud issue? Regina, yeah.
Yeah, well, I just thought it was interesting that the brain cloud was never true in the first place. Yeah. Because I think that's true with a lot of spiritual teachings, actually. Yeah, you know, like when we finally wake up to truth, we realize some of those spiritual teachings were never true in the first place, but they got us going in the right direction. They were like signposts. You know, one example that I often use is in one of Eckhart Tolle's books, you know, he talks about the inner body. He asks people to be quiet and feel the inner body. And then near the end of the same same book, he says there is no inner body, you know, so he was using a symbol for a while, but then he let go of the symbol. So I thought that was really interesting, that the brain cloud, it didn't heal. It was never ever there in the first place. So it was just something that was needed temporarily to get him moving in the right direction.
Wow, lovely. Thank you. Wow. You know, I never made it all the way to the end of that book, I guess, because I was pretty ticked at Eckhart Tolle for saying that there was an inner body. I'm like, no, there's not. So I must have put the book down. Okay, who wants to talk about what the significance of the shopping spree was?
I'll start.
Yay.
The driver said, I'm just here to drive the car, not to tell you who you are. And it said, and he told him later, as he's shopping, you're starting to come into focus, kid. So to me, it was like him discovering himself at a deeper level instead of always being so dull-minded. He didn't know himself at all. That's what it meant to me.
Awesome. Thank you, Shauna.
Yeah, there was another conversation in the movie at a different time that continued that. It's when he was talking to one of the Meg Ryans. I don't remember which one. But he said, who am I? I think it was the first Meg Ryan when they went out to eat. He says, who am I? That's the real question, isn't it? And then he said, the door to the universe is you or me, right? So he knew that who am I question was the door to the universe. We call it infinite awareness. And he knew that was something that he really needed to probe further into. It was also, I don't even know who said this. I wrote this down. It's a quote, but I don't remember who said it. But it's the opposite of that. It says, I have no interest in myself. I start thinking about myself. I get bored out of my mind.
That was Joe.
That was Joe also. So that kind of shows the other side of that. It kind of reminds me of, again, a Nisargadatta quote that we saw at the Natural Meditation this week, where he was talking about how most people will do anything to avoid sitting down and just looking at their consciousness. You know, they entertain themselves in all kinds of ways, keep very, very busy. So this is the average situation. I have no interest in myself, meaning, you know, within, right? I have no interest in myself. When I sit down and close my eyes, I get bored out of my mind, right? And then the other side is realizing that finding out who I am is the door to the universe, or the door to infinite awareness. So kind of, you know, from one end to the other end was represented in the movie.
Yeah. There was another character that this who am I question seemed to be raised with, and I don't have this in the play sheet, but how about the character of Angelica, the sister with the bright red hair and the bright clothes? It seemed to me that she was asking, you know, both ego, if you will, and inner wisdom ask that same question, who am I, right? Well, inner wisdom doesn't have to ask it, but Holy Spirit and ego, the two parts of the mind ask that question, and ego tries to answer it. And that's what Angelica seemed to be doing, because he's like, what are you doing? She's like, well, I'm a painter and an artist. But she didn't seem convinced about it. And go ahead, Shauna. I mean, who do I hear from? Lynn?
Oh. No, I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah. And it was funny, cause she was like, art comes from somewhere, but she didn't really seem to know where. So she really seemed like she was searching for herself, but she was, you know, she's looking out there. And when he invited her to take the same step that he had, because she's like, did you ever think about killing yourself? He's like, why, if you have these two choices, killing yourself or doing something you're afraid to do, you know, why wouldn't you just take the leap and do what you're afraid to do? And she's like, give up daddy's money and leave LA. And so again, it kind of goes back to that same theme. She wasn't really willing to explore who she was because she was too afraid. She was too attached to those things that she felt kept her safe. So she was an interesting character, I thought. I did love her poem. I can't quote it, but it was a great poem.
It was all set up on their drive when they were talking about, oh, I like LA. Or, how do you like LA? And he goes, looks fake. I like it. You know, she said something like that. Oh, it's great. It stinks. But, you know, she wouldn't query any further, because once he would question her, then she would go, I don't have anything to say to that. I don't have a response to that. She said that a couple times, I think, when they were in the car there on the hill, which was kind of interesting. So to your point, she was lost, but she wasn't curious. She wasn't willing to even think, speculate, engage at all.
Yeah, she certainly wasn't self-reflective, but like you say, she did seem like really afraid to just go outside her little bubble. That she might be wrong if she did. Yeah. Interesting character. It was fun too that Meg Ryan played all three of those characters in such different, I mean, they were such different characters, and she played them all so well.
What do you think the symbol is about that? That she played all three characters?
Oh, I don't know. I don't have one, but it looks like Tom Fields does. Tom, it's like being in an auction. You can't make those gestures without being called on. Sold to Tom Fields.
Well, that we were just trying to figure out. Actually, I was thinking about that. You know, what did that mean? What did the director or the writer mean when they had Meg Ryan play all three people? That they were all part of each other of some sort, you know, or they were connected somehow. I don't know. The first one didn't want to have anything to do with them after she found out.
Yeah.
The second one, I can't remember if she was.
He never told her.
Oh, he never told her.
I don't think.
I don't know. Well, then there you go. I don't know. Go ahead.
Well, I tell you what, Tom, you think on that and you write your answer in the forum. How's that? Because I think it's a great question, and frankly had not occurred to me. Lynn, what do you think?
I don't know. My experience with people is that we seem to bring in the same people over and over. I had a friend who was divorced from a policeman, and whenever we would go out, somehow in a whole room of guys, she would always be attracted to or attract more policemen, another policeman. So sometimes we attract someone who is the opposite, but then turns out to be the same. Like my first husband was very quiet, my second husband wasn't, but they were both cheaters. So I was attracted to cheaters, I guess. So he was attracted to, there was something within her that he was very attracted to, and he kept bringing her back into his life.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
He liked her right away at the job, that miserable job. That was probably the only thing that kept him there.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting to hear him go on and on about how, of course, I know there's a woman in the room. I can smell her perfume. I can hear her dress across the room. And yeah. And the other thing was he told each of them. So there's got to be some significance to that. He told each of them, did I ever tell you the first time I met you, I felt like I knew you, including the very first girl. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's that will be interesting to look at. So thank you all for bringing that up. Cool.
There was another part to the clothing that I was thinking about, that he went out on this spending spree easily from somebody who was so morose and miserable and dismal. He got right into it to go shopping. It was like somebody gave him permission to be happy and to have something to look forward to again. even if it was supposedly just for a short period of time. He shopped, he bought the best of everything, and he had no abandon. And then when he asked the guy, the driver, to come with him to that restaurant, the driver said, no, this is a door you have to walk through yourself.
Yeah.
And isn't that really all of our thing? You know, we're all helping each other. We all share. But the thing is, we've got to do our own work.
Amen.
4 hours of meditation, right? Would you?
It's easy. Yeah, and I when you talk about the shopping again, reminded me that it occurred to me on the rewatch that he was provided with everything that he would need on his journey. Mm-hmm. You know, the little bar in a suitcase, the big suitcases that saved his life more than once, the umbrella, the golf thing so he wouldn't be bored out there on the, I mean, just everything that he could possibly need, even the luxury of like the golf thing, he had. He was provided for everything he needed on his journey.
That's the truth about the universe. It provides everything we need. Maybe not everything we want or desire, but everything we need will be given to us when we need it. It'll be there.
Yeah. Amen.
I wonder about the luggage, if the luggage represent, you know, because a lot of people on the spiritual journey, they talk about letting go of your baggage. Well, your baggage is all this stuff from the past, like your regrets. And what if the symbol here is that, you know, your baggage gets such a bad rap, but in this case, his baggage literally saved his life. He had four huge things. And I think about the symbol of four, it's like balance, you know, and not only did it save his life, but it saved his, well, he didn't know it at the time, but that was literally his fiance at that time. And then, you know, she was his wife, and he gets to start a whole new life from the buoyancy of this baggage, keeping him afloat. So the past coming into the present moment, but in a helpful way, like, you know, how like Holy Spirit helps us to see things anew, like that little tweak in our mind of maybe a past event or a past occurrence or maybe a relationship, that instead of seeing in this horrible thing that happened or this horrible relationship, but then somehow it gets tweaked in such a way that you can actually see the blessing instead of the curse of it all. So I just thought that was interesting, but I really want to reiterate what you said too, because he was really provided. He didn't know. He just had spontaneously, I want four of them. But little did he know that was the very thing that he was going to need. So it's such a symbol in our lives. We don't know that we're being provided for along the way. And we are. Like, surprise, surprise. All along, you're provided for.
Okay. That's awesome. Thank you, Dawn. Yeah, that was a lot of luggage. Maybe I really like your take on it. Maybe it's because they had to be primarily empty. So maybe that comes in too. Yeah. Oh, funny.
It's actually a really nice symbol, though. I like that.
Yeah. It's
empty. You have the baggage, yet you're empty. So.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, so the next question we asked here was, what do Joe and Patricia have in common? And Patricia is the yacht owner, or, yeah, the last one, yeah.
What I noticed is they both said they had never loved anyone else before.
Hmm. Wow. I missed that. Thank you. That's awesome.
And they both wanted to ride off to a place where no man goes.
Yeah.
I think that they were also relearning how to be courageous and take back the joy in their lives that they had given up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they're both empty.
Yeah. That's so cool. Yeah, and you know, I was surprised again on the rewatching to hear Patricia say that she was ashamed because she had a price. So just like Joe, she felt like she had sold out. She sold out to her father, her price being the yacht. But yeah, they seem to be in a similar, come from a similar starting point. She described it as, do you all remember how she described it? The two words, how she described it?
Soul sick.
Soul sick. Yeah. Yeah. There was also, do you all remember the scene on the boat and what she says about what her father said about people being asleep?
Oh, I wrote that.
Yeah, I have that also. I have, father says the whole world is asleep and only a few are awake.
Right.
They live in a state, the awake ones live in a state of constant total amazement.
Wow. Yeah, it sounds like something Ramana Maharshi could have written, right? Would have written. Yeah.
Another thing that's not on the sheet, but you know, I mentioned that I would rename the film Orange Soda or Freedom. You know, when it came time to jump in the volcano, the chief was explaining to Joe that the reason none of the people in the tribe would jump in the volcano is because they had learned to love orange soda and they didn't want to give up their orange soda to jump in the volcano. And so I really thought the orange soda for those natives represented everything that we might be attached to that would keep us from, you know, taking that final leap into awakening. So yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. I got to admit, I think it was Regina that suggested this movie, and I was like, pshaw, Joe, that's just a silly little movie. But I I think as we found out, it's a lot of symbolism here, a lot of right on points.
Also, what about the confidence that she said she had in herself and how it displayed itself till the end of the movie by going with him, jumping in? Always being brave at the end, saying, I don't remember the exact words, but maybe we would be provided for or watch and see. She had the confidence to know.
Yeah, she said, nobody knows anything. We'll take this leap and we'll see.
Nobody knows anything.
Yeah, nobody knows anything. We'll take this leap and we'll see. That's gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
And there was another thing I noticed too, was they asked, Joe asked before they went to jump in the volcano, Joe asked, you know, is there a ceremony or something? And the chief said, no ceremony, just jump in. And that reminded me of when we were at the natural meditation this week, that question that I asked, you know, how do you prepare yourself for self-awareness meditation? And the answer was, there is no preparation. You just do it. Right. So it's funny how we're looking for ceremony. You know, we're always looking for delays when actually there's nothing. You just go do it.
Simple. Well, Regina, how about that other question on the play sheet? What do you think about the fact that jumping into the volcano has to be voluntary?
Yeah. Well, for me, I didn't even answer that on the play sheet because it was so obvious. I didn't know what to say.
You can't say it now. Dawn's got the answer. Dawn, tell us.
Well, I don't know if I really have the answer, but I love what Regina said about the orange soda symbolizing the attachments. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. All those natives with the orange soda craving, loving, whatever, that Joe and Patricia got thrown, at the very end, the whole island sank. Okay, so all these people who didn't surrender, wanted to hold on to their orange soda, they sunk. And who stayed afloat? But the two who totally surrendered. Mm. So actually, surrender saved their lives. By giving up their life, they
got their lives. And that, it reminds me of a verse that just came from the Bible where Jesus said, whoever will lose their life for me will gain everlasting life. Mm-hmm. So I just thought that was hilarious. So the more you want to hold on, the more you're going to lose. The more you're willing to let go, the more, well, we'll see. Like, you, no one knows. We'll just jump in and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, you're right on with everything you said. And boy, do I appreciate your enthusiasm.
Well, and yeah, you can't be forced into awakening. I mean, so it has to be voluntary. You know, we always say it has to come from your willingness. It right. starts with your willingness, and then it turns into your intense desire for liberation, right?
You just said mine.
Oh, sorry, Tom. I take all that back. Rewind. Let Tom answer.
I was going to say it myself. Yeah, we were talking. The significance of that was the death of the ego has to be an act and of desire and free will. So that's what you
do. Yeah, good answer. Awesome.
To me, what's so fascinating and truthful about that is, while let's say independent choice on your own, you're jumping into the unknown. So yes, you're cognitively doing something, but you're still don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and even after they jumped in and they were spit back out, right, they were still in the unknown. In fact, they now had to exist in the unknown, didn't they?
Yeah. Back where they started, in the ocean.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, awesome. I just got that. That's symbolic. We start in the ocean and we end in the ocean. It's the circle.
All right, I'm going to play you all another little scene here. I think it's pretty quick. Let me pull it up first and then get you on share and come on, go full screen.
Whose name I do not know. Thank you for my life. I forgot how big. Thank you. Thank you for my life.
Yeah, cool. I had asked what this scene says to you, love to hear your answers if you have one. It was enough just to watch the to watch that scene again. It's so moving. Does anybody have anything they want to say about it, Jay?
I admit I didn't watch Show the Volcano, but from watching the scene. I really appreciated the gratitude that he was brought to and lost everything. And he was brought to the heart in gratitude and like restoring, you know, his connection with God and total surrender, total realizing that, you know, he can't do it alone. And just appreciated the surrender, the gratitude. So it was nice.
Thank you, Jay.
Yeah, there was one more point that really impressed me about the movie, and that was from the time Joe decided, from the time he accepted the offer to jump in the volcano, he didn't waver, even when he fell in love. He never, ever, ever wavered. He walked, you know, at the beginning of the movie, when he was walking that job, remember, it was this zigzag line.
Right.
But once he decided to jump in the volcano, he walked a straight line, and just nothing deterred him all the way to the end. So I really respected that.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, and the final question here. Oh, no, Tom. Go ahead, Tom. Okay. Oh, he's muted.
I don't want to get off subject of what you were doing, and I know we ain't got a lot of time, but I was thinking throughout the movie, he didn't want to die. You know, at the beginning he was, messed up because he was going to die. He didn't want to die. But throughout the movie, several times he was willing to die. Mm-hmm. You know, he jumped in after her and almost died. He didn't drink any water. He gave it all to her. Then he jumped in the volcano. So I don't know if that means anything. To me it did. I don't know what. I just noticed it.
Yeah, it's a good point. Don.
I think the giant moon, bigger than usual, symbolized light itself. Okay, because you think about this, the moon, it's a reflection of, it's just a reflection of the sun, right? So it could be symbolic of the Son of God itself, okay? He's becoming one with the light of his true nature. But at the same time, he says something so important. Like everyone who's reading the Tao, you know, the Tao Te Ching, the Tao that cannot be named. And he admitted, you know, he doesn't even know the name for, yet he's grateful. He's seeing the grandeur of his life, this life, that he was given this life, and he could see the mistake he made of wasting it, but now he's like, all of a sudden the light has come on, not just out there, but this huge light came on inside of him of the all. So yeah, and I think maybe that was the first time he prayed to the name. So okay, we got like 1 minute.
Woot woot, that was great. Cheryl has asked if next month's movie could be, and she asked and asked, so I'm taking that as guidance, The Sea of Trees. I have seen the movie. I don't remember exactly what goes on. Hopefully it's a fabulous movie. If I watch it in the next few days and go, oh, we can't discuss that, I'll let you know. But The Sea of Trees for next month. Thank you, guys. This is such fun. I love you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Bye.